FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
You are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Kerry Lutz. The date is February 9th, 2016, and looks like there is a potential banking crisis in the offing. And can it just be contained to Europe or to China, or does it cascade and spread across the globe with lightning speed? And Danielle Park, you are here to answer that question as best you can, or best anyone can. And welcome.
Hey, Kerry. Hi.
So we're in a fix again. Shock of all shocks. Banks. We got Italian banking sector, completely illiquid, insolvent, 16% non-performing loan ratio. And then they've got one bank that's really bad. That's up to 33. $200 billion worth of bad loans, another $200 billion sitting around. And we're not even including government debt in the bad loan category. Who's paying that? So what are these banks in Europe going to do? Or what are the politicians in Europe going to do about their bank problem?
Well, the model they're using and have been using for the past 10 years has been the model they tried in Japan after their bust in 1989. And that has been to extend and pretend, to paper over, to stop valuing things at market and mark to fantasy, whatever values you want to ascribe to some of this bad debt on your books. And we know that that's not worked in Japan. It's been a catastrophe, both for the economy, for productivity, for, you know, anything that could be remotely supportive of capitalism or free markets. So Mr. Bernanke was the scholar who convinced everyone to try what hadn't worked in Japan. And that's what they've been doing over the past 10 years with both arms and both legs. And, now we've got a revelation that there's more bad debt in the system than there's ever been, that it was simply papered over for a bit. And now you've got this contagion sweeping the world, Kerry. You know, Deutsche Bank and Credit Suisse plunging now back down to the lows, actually slightly below the lows they reached in the 09 crisis, below where they reached in the European debt crisis in 2011-12. And that's not even to speak about their derivative exposure, which is off the charts, the highest ever. It's sweeping. And here's the thing. Even the Canadian financials, this week they're off over 5% as a sector. They're off 15% in the last year. And these were considered more conservative, smaller. Our banks weren't allowed to, they were more regulated in the boom phase and weren't allowed to go into derivatives as heavily as some of their international counterparts, to which they complained vehemently, by the way, Kerry, wanting to play with the big boys and angry that conservative little Canada was holding them back a bit. But unfortunately, they got into a whole bunch of debt issues, financing both the household retail sector as well as the energy patch. And of course, that's now coming back to haunt them.
Yeah, interesting thing about the Canadian banks, the whole oil patch thing there is really bad. People, we've been reading the stories here. I mean, I'm sure, you see them all the time, but, in the U.S., not so much, but stories about what's happening there, depression, suicides, all of that, foreclosures, jingle mail, looks like bad news ahead. And oil prices don't look like they're going up anytime soon, do they?
And that's the key point, right? Everyone's forecasts have been sort of, again, pretend and extend's been the model of choice. So there's been many people who are exposed to the energy patch, who are participating in it, to say, this is we're factoring a bounce back. We've penciled in the $80 a barrel oil and over the next year, or 50, even 50 would be nearly 50% higher than it is now. And yet that wouldn't save the bacon of many of the producers, because they are so over-levered today, too much debt, and they need cash flow. And so, it's a tale as old as time, Kerry. As you know, it's the subprime debt crisis in America redo. It's here we are again with the exact same players doing the exact same things, the exact same models that were sold as genius in the boom time are coming back to be shown as absolutely treacherous in the downtime.
Yeah, well, I have a new new name for that finance. I call it subprime financing. Because it's criminal to loan to people who aren't going to pay the money back and don't have the means to do it. Mm-hmm. That is subprime.
Yeah. Right? And all the billboards in Canada today are everywhere you look, all the, banner advertising that comes up on our internet sites and all that is all about the car makers. And their big thing is 00000, drive away without paying. That's what it says all over my town here. You drive around, drive away without paying, drive a new car without paying.
I could afford one of those. If I don't have to pay for it, I'll take two.
Yeah. We've seen this before. And at some point, someone's going to pay. For selling cars to people who can't pay. And unfortunately, the last couple of times this has happened, it's been the taxpayer.
Yeah, well, why should this time be any different, Danielle? You know, nobody ever learns. And as long as it can be foisted off upon the taxpayer and nobody out there has to bear the responsibility or be accountable for their bad behavior, it's the Greenspan put all over again.
Yeah, and it's the theme of our time. There's no doubt about that. I mean, that article that was written in the Wall Street Journal today that I had great fun with on the blog, complaining that there's this angry mob that are out for heads in the finance sector, essentially. I mean, this particular author from the Wall Street Journal is the deputy editor, as I say, of the preeminent finance establishment publication in the world. It's not surprising that he thinks the criticism of Wall Street is unfair, and it's just as bad.
Don't blame the poor bankers, right?
Don't blame them. But there's two things there. Number one, don't be a coward and hide behind the facade of a corporation, which all the finance players are doing, saying, it wasn't us, it was our company. That's the first thing. Second thing, be a grown up. You want to be a big, genius person, then take the risk. Because by the way, that's what defines adults in the world, is those who bear the risk and those who don't. When you're not prepared to bear your own risk and you want to be bailed out and underwritten by taxpayer dollars, you're actually a weakling coward, in my view. You're not a strong, genius business leader of any kind whatsoever. And you sure as hell don't have a reason to be indignant when others call you out as such, because that's exactly what's happened. They've taken unjust enrichment at the expense of the public purse. They have, then everyone who's been part of this machine that's doing all these illegal activities has pretended that they weren't really the one directing anything. There's no directing mind ever, to take credit, even though the bonuses went to certain people in great concentration. So it's, I think the question, because I work in finance, and of course, not everyone in finance is inherently evil or meaning to be a fraudster. But my question to finance workers is, what are you doing personally to stop the harm and improve the system? And if you're not doing anything and you're just continuing to work in a corrupt model and saying, oh, well, what can I do? I have a mortgage. You're part of the problem, and be prepared for the criticism, because it's justified.
And there was a great article, I guess it was on Zero Hedge a couple weeks ago, about a Chinese banker who was exactly in that type of situation. He's approving loans that he knows will never get paid, but he has a mortgage. And he's got credit cards and auto loans that he has to pay, and he's not making any money unless he makes bad loans. So the whole daisy chain just keeps going around and around. What surprised me was I thought that the Chinese were very frugal, prudent people, and, to hear a guy having loans, all these loans, I mean, didn't say who he owed them to, but, I guess the shadow banking sector or whatever. But the Chinese are in hock just like everyone else.
Absolutely.
It was shocking to me.
Actually, more so, in some cases, because they've had is it even possible to be more deranged in the way that the money has flowed through their financial system than the model in the West, which has already been pretty nutso. But, we're still having the overflow of that, and it's coming into places like Vancouver in the realty market. There was a big story exposed by our national business paper, the Globe and Mail, on the weekend about the this shadow flipping that's going on in Vancouver, where people are just optioning, again, exactly what we saw in the real estate bubble in the United States in 2006, optioning options on options and selling the rights to contracts.
Derivatives.
I mean, we saw this in the 20s in the big boom in real estate that crashed before the crash of 29, too. Same kind of thing.
Hey, those are true derivatives, right? I mean, when you write an option, that is a derivative. It has no, its value is totally dependent upon something else. So that's a true derivative. And then these houses are being left to decay and deteriorate. Did you see those pictures of the houses in Vancouver? In the best neighborhoods, the Chinese own them or care of some trust department in some Chinese bank that probably is insolvent. And it was just really shocking.
Well, the thing is that everyone that's participating in the system is paid commissions up front, whether that be brokers or real estate mortgage brokers, real estate brokers. And so that's why our system has collapsed, because everyone involved in the daisy chain has been getting their funds up front. And this is why we can't have longer term fiduciary managers of wealth and pensions and places that are supposed to keep money for the long term. We have to break these incentives, which give them, you know, all the incentive in the world to put things into risk and none of the obligation or responsibility for the outcome, because then everyone's focused on the transaction and the and gaming and never on how the system's doing or whether the money is going to be compounding or growing over time.
The idea of the fiduciary obligation to your clients here seems to have gone out with the 20th century. So many things that left us there. There is no fiduciary trust anymore. Basically, for the most part, they just do what they please and say, well, everyone else was doing it.
Right. So that's been the big problem, is that everyone that's participating in this circle has been allowed to say that they're just salespeople. Whenever anything goes wrong, they say, well, we're just salespeople. We're not fiduciaries. We were just doing it was a reasonable recommendation. We didn't know their whole financial picture. We didn't know whether they could afford to lose money or not. Like, they just totally try and distance themselves from any acknowledgement of the facts. And that's why our system's broken down. That's why the bankers all were allowed to do that and still do that, lobbying, you know, every single day with all their might to prevent the Department of Labor or anyone else from bringing in a fiduciary standard. And I think that the outcome of all this is my big prediction of all this, Carrie. We will find our way back to fiduciary standards. Why? Because the system has burst, because it's bankrupt, because not just morally bankrupt, financially bankrupt, and it simply can't continue. So I think we're going to hit the wall again here in the world of finance. I think it seems to be unraveling as we speak. I mean, we haven't even priced in the losses. As we said, most people are still using these mark to fantasy models of, you know, if oil bounces back to here, we'll be able to do that, this, that, or the other thing. But no one's yet acknowledging this profoundly negative wealth effect that's happened by this, you know, complete evaporation of oil revenues, and oil assets have been, you know, they haven't yet been marked down to the reality that they've lost 70% of their value in the last 18 months. So once you mark all that stuff back to reality, you realize that there's this massive, like, you know, more than $1 trillion of capital just missing and still counting. And that's going to have knockoff effects to all these markets and assets and services that have been unduly inflated on that sort of bubble that went on there. And as that all comes down, everyone has to knock the zeros off.
Yeah, that is it. So the big star for the year so far, precious metals, right? What's your take? Is that going to continue as a fear trade? It's a fear trade, right?
It could do. I mean, certainly the gold shares have been, were hammered, like beaten senseless over the past 5 years, down, you know, by more than 70%. And the XGD, the gold sector company shares, you know, it's been bottoming. It's had multiple false starts and mean reversions over the past few years. Now, could this be, you know, the breakout? The technician in our firm, Corey, has done a chart updating it just today, showing that, you know, basically you have some more upside to go on the XGD, the composite of gold companies, at least the Canadian gold company sectors, you'd still have to get through sort of $11 for it to constitute a sort of making headway through that downward trend that's been in play since 2013 anyway, and we're still below that. So we'll see. But as far as gold, the commodity goes, you know, I think it's still going to be difficult. This is just my concern. I think it's still going to be difficult to justify much higher prices in gold without any inflation. And I realize you can argue the alternate currency, and that may indeed why you've seen some flows going into that. I know people are going into cash heavily. It's started. It's not nearly what I would say panic levels, but people have been going to cash, and I think people have been going perhaps to bullion as a alternate currency. The extent to which that continues, I think, depends very much on how much money people need out of the system to fund spending. And that is the nub of it, because if you're putting money into a bullion, that's assuming that's excess reserves that you don't need to spend this week or next week or next month. And I think that as countries around the world go into sovereign wealth management funds are liquidating. Why? Because most of that money was accumulated during the bubbling days of commodities as exporters had all these sovereign wealth funds chasing assets all around the world. We're seeing that money come out and be repatriated back to home currency so that they can spend it on, you know, budget deficits and things. So to the extent that commodities or that hard assets can retain the inflows when people are looking to raise cash for spending, that's the question that I don't know the answer to that. We'll have to see.
Yeah, I'm not convinced either. And I'm not a precious metals permabull. I view it more as insurance against inevitable government foul-ups. Too many paper currencies have bitten the dust throughout history for you not to have some concern that these rocket scientists now who are running things might just do the same thing. I mean, I just remember the shock, Danielle, in 2008 when the crash hit. I mean, I knew a lot of these Wall Street guys lived in the same area, you know, worked in Manhattan, large portion of my adult life. And I always thought they were like on the ball. And then when I found out that all they were doing was taking lousy mortgages and repackaging them and re-rating them and turning them into gold, and that was the primary driver of earnings on Wall Street for all of the 2000s up till the crash. That was it. That's how they made, I don't know what percentage, but a astonishingly large portion of their profits came from that. Then I realized, you know, these guys don't know anything or they don't care. Like The Big Short, like that guy who was doing the CDOs, he was making more money than anyone else, and he didn't want to know what was going to happen when the whole thing came to an end. And so after that, my opinion of Wall Street really hit the skids. And, you know, let's face it, they're running the financial system. The financial industry is running the global financial system.
Well, I don't know about running. I think running suggests a level of control that they do not possess. I think they have an incredible hubris, incredible recklessness, very little conscience often. Greed, they spend too much. They're not good with money. So they have these exorbitant spending requirements. And so they, you know, justify doing all sorts of things to keep the cash flow going. But, you know, history is replete with example after example of the fact that they aren't actually in control. And the more leverage they add, the less in control they end up being in the end. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I think you're seeing a whole bunch of knockoff effects from this latest episode, which was aided and abetted by the central banks of the world. And it's unraveling, as it always does and must. And it's a question of just trying not to get hurt in this phase. You know, I think for individuals, I bang the drum every day just to try and say, these are massive bubbles that are unraveling. And you do not want to be caught in harm's way, because the government will not bail out us individuals. And if you're late in your working life, or you've amassed the bulk of your savings, or you're already retired, you must be defensive at this time, because, you know, even if you think you're a buy and hold investor and, you know, you start seeing 20, 30, 40, 50% of your portfolio evaporate, that is very concerning and anxiety producing for just about everybody. And very few people are able to just grin and bear that through it, most often because they are already trying to take income off that money. And so as they're trying to spend and the money's evaporating, it's a very vicious cycle.
Yeah, it is a vicious cycle indeed. And not a lot of places to hide. Getting outside the system, that could well be why the dollar, why gold is up. The dollar has taken a major hit over the past week, down almost 5%, 4%. I mean, you just see it. It's happening. And Bitcoin, Bitcoin is even up from $180 to around, I think I looked, $374 before lunch. Maybe people are going over to Bitcoin. You're worried Europeans. I don't know that that's the best place to be. But when you have very few choices because of financial repression, what do you do? And
it's a difficult question for sure. I think some people are putting some cash in a safe in their house. I think that that's not a ridiculous idea to do, just for, you know, emergency money, so to speak. Some people are putting money in gold and silver coins or bars. That's not perhaps a ridiculous idea. I don't agree with the whole buying financial versions of these assets. I don't see how that helps. Trying to cash out of, you know, a financial asset on an open market when a market is, you know, being sold lock, stock, and barrel because people are in credit crunch all over and need to raise cash. I think, you know, basically you go to the most liquid, deepest instruments. If you're going to hold, you know, about the bulk of your savings is still going to be in currency denominated, you know, funds. So I look to things like, you know, treasuries, Canadian and U.S. government bonds. Cash is still cash. And just trying to keep away from things that are the most inflated and vulnerable to panic selling.
Hey, and that's very sound advice, because these panics can start at any moment and just decimate a market before you even had a chance to hit the sell button on your computer. So you need to be planning for these things now, because these panics are contagions. They just happen so quickly, because all you need is a bunch of money guys looking for the exit, and you're going to be collateral damage.
And I just want to point out something. I've heard all these monkeys on television again, you know, the Liz Ann Saunders of Charles Schwab, who's selling everyone's order flow up the river. Yeah. The HFTs are going wild. You know, they're controlling all the regulators. They're scalping money out of the system, even though there's a lot of really good people working every day to expose this incredible fraud that's going on and how it has to be stopped. And I'm optimistic eventually that this will finally be stopped. But in the meantime, don't buy this lark that, you know, you're panicking and irrational if you decide you need to sell and take some of your savings out of harm's way. This is the party line that's being pumped through the airwaves today, you know, by the establishment, who have a vested interest in keeping everyone's capital in harm's way, and it fully invested in these markets. It is not true. You do not have to. And it is not panicking to decide that there is bad prospects and that you are going to sit on the sidelines and wait for better valuations to present. In fact, I would suggest to you that's much more rational than anything else. And so I just, you know, just be careful. I know there's lots of people out there who are concerned about their savings, who start calling their Joe and Jane financial advisor, and they get the same story all the time, which is no, don't be irrational. Don't panic. Don't try and sell. Just keep buying. And, you know, you always say with what, because you told me to keep in, so I don't have more money to buy with.
Yeah.
And secondly, you know, as I say, be defensive. Think about your own time horizon, not these fantastical 30-year visions that people talk about in the financial business. That's just nonsense. Think about your own net worth and protecting it right now.
And surviving. Hey, by the way, there's a new mini-series on TV. I hope you had a chance to catch it, called Billions.
No, I'm waiting for it to come on iTunes. It hasn't yet, but yeah, I'm going to
check it. So good. Damian Lewis, Paul Giamatti, and God, I don't remember the female actresses. They're phenomenal in it. But basically, it looks to me like it seems to be the story of Stephen A. Cohn from SAC. Just this guy is, I don't know that Stephen Cohn was ever quite that brilliant, but, you know, creating firewalls to hide all the things going on. You know, he never got brought down. They made him shut the hedge fund down.
He got to keep his billions. Yeah,
but it became a family office. And now, last I heard, he was going to start another fund. So, highly recommended. Some of it will turn your stomach. Some of it's really funny. One thing I will say, the guy in the movie, very faithful to his wife, no matter what happens. And, hey, I knew people at SAC Group. They were up in Connecticut, Greenwich, and, you know, they just seem like normal guys. Who would have thought? But it's worth seeing. I think it's on HBO, but I wouldn't swear to it. It's on one of the networks. See it. It's really worth watching. I think we're up to episode 5 now. And, you know, the U.S. attorney's after this guy, but there's a lot of back and forth and blackmailing going on by government officials of each other. It's really a great story with great acting and great scripts. I mean, you can't ask for better than that. In fact,
sure. And hopefully it'll help advance this discussion among thinking people all over the world and in America about the fact that this can't continue. This kind of just, you know, buying of legal protection, no matter what you do, because you're a billionaire and can afford to get the best legal help in the land, yes, that you can control the regulators and policymakers. There, you know, this is the very definition of abuse of trust. This is why you have to break up people that are wielding just unnatural and unhealthy influence over everything.
Absolutely. So check that out, called Billions. You have to Google it, find out where it's playing in the States here. It's on. I'm not sure about if it made it up to your neck of the woods yet, Danielle, but it really is instructive, and it's extremely well done, high production values, great acting, and just everything about it's pretty good. I won't say it's the best thing I've ever seen. Not quite as good as Breaking Bad, but you could look at this guy as kind of the Walter White of hedge funds, and you wouldn't be too far off. So on that note, check out Danielle's work over at jugglingdynamite.com. She's got weekly commentary she does on the markets, as well as anything that catches her astute eye. And you'll find the link, as always, in the show notes on financialsurvivalnetwork.com. Danielle, we'll talk to you in a couple of weeks.
Thank you, Carrie.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get 3 free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.